Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now, you're very welcome along. It's Heineken Champions Cup semi-final weekend. We are very much looking forward to this. We have Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent here in studio. Rory, thank you for coming in.
Cheers, Joe.
And Keith Wood, you're there.
I am here. How are you, Joe?
Good man, very well. We have a cracking weekend to look forward to. Before we do that, just to touch on the latest on the Israel-Folau saga, and it's now definitely going to turn into a saga. So Australian Rugby have this afternoon confirmed that Folau has made a formal intention to contest his dismissal. Initially, Rugby Australia said he committed a high-level breach of the player's code of conduct, which warranted his sacking. Well, Folau has said, OK, I want a code of conduct hearing. And this is going to melt into the next couple of weeks. Code of conduct includes, by the way, that every player use social media appropriately, treat everyone equally, fairly, with dignity, regardless of gender or gender identity, sexual orientation, and you must not bring your team or rugby into disrepute. And Folau himself has been given formal instruction, in particular, not to make any social media posts that condemn or vilify people on the basis of their sexuality. The chief executive of Rugby Australia, Raylene Castle, she has said that Folau's decision to appeal is not an unexpected outcome. They were expecting this. He signed a new contract 2 months ago. That was for $4 million Australian dollars. I think we're all in agreement that Folau's beliefs are outdated, to say the least. The issue is, Rory, and Raylene Castle, Rugby Australia chief, made this pretty clear. This is not a religious discussion. This is simply a discussion around employee-employer contracts and relationships and the values of contractual arrangements within that agreement. So on that basis, Folau is in big trouble here. It's no surprise he's going to appeal a $4 million contract.
Well, yeah, it's been a good week for employment lawyers around the place. like, he's obviously going to fight this. There's too much on the line for him not to. Mm. You would expect and hope that an organisation like Rugby Australia, in conjunction with the New South Wales Union, had their ducks in a row before they announced their intention to sack him. They'd obviously dealt with this issue last year when he first made his views known on the topic. And in his contract renewals, you can be sure that it was a topic of conversation and it was written in somewhere.
Well, interestingly, that was reported widely, but Castle revealed that there were no extra clauses added to his four-year contract. So in this regard, it's a standard contract. Now, okay. It seems the standard contract
includes the code of conduct, though.
Includes the code of conduct.
So it's whether his freedom of religion overrides he's, I presume, going to argue that his entitlement to the freedom of his religious beliefs overrides the code of conduct. It's how tight that contract was written, and how tightly, you know, they've done it along with how tightly they've aligned their code of conduct to the contracts themselves. Yeah. I mean, you're getting into nitty gritty. It's going to be a lot of lawyers in the room fighting it out. He clearly believes he's a case, but I think fundamentally, Rugby Australia have done the right thing, and he's entitled to his legal defence. He's entitled to fight for his right to work and play at the World Cup and all that sort of stuff. But I think his religious views are incompatible with modern life and are incompatible with the... I mean, Rugby Australia need to attract sponsors, and that is, at the end of the day, they are a business that are in a really difficult market and are struggling badly, and to have their marquee player come out in that way is just so damaging to their brand, but also is just wrong, and is damaging to young players, old players who are within the game, and if they are the values they want their players to espouse, then Folau being incompatible with them, they just have to move on from him, and it might get a little bit ugly. We'll have to wait and see.
I suspect it will. Mm. Castle did say that, by the way, although there were no specific clauses in Folau's contract, they did have a number of meetings in the build-up to the signing of his most recent contract, and they were documented meetings, they kept minutes, and he was verbally warned about his conduct on social media. Keith, nobody is saying he's not entitled to hold these views. That's a key point to make here. And regarding freedom of expression, Israel Folau is not going to jail here. There's a higher threshold. That's what I think Rugby Australia is trying to establish.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly complex, and it's part of the modern world of immediate access to media, immediate access to social media, that people can give their views anywhere and people can pick it up. And I think it becomes very difficult then when you're a representative of a national side and you have certain things and ideals that you're supposed to uphold within sport, makes it incredibly complex. And so whether he's entitled to have those opinions, which he is entitled to have them, it's where is the line drawn on respecting the rights of other people and not being hurtful or hateful to other people. And I think that's the situation, that lack of inclusivity element comes into it. And having warned about it in the past, I think it'll go into an immediate battle, because it was interesting that from the first comment he made back after the first censure of a week ago or whatever, was that they were looking that it was impinging on his religious rights. So it's trying to figure out where the law, an updated law on free speech, features in relation to your right to be able to be religious or any particular religion and to espouse those beliefs externally. It's very, very complicated.
No, it is. And that will be an arbitrary line to find, and it will probably be an ever-changing arbitrary line as society evolves.
Well, I think so. But I think we're at a particular nexus in technology and in the world where in the last 20 years those rights are being put under huge pressure because of the technology. Mm. And it's interesting to see that it's happening in rugby and that this is the conversation that's happening, that rugby seems to be at the forefront of it. So, but it is something that maybe the laws that are written in terms of rights were not fit for purpose for the amount of technology that's out there at the present moment in time.
Yeah. Well, on the technology point, I suspect Stuart McCall is kind of scratching his head saying, how the hell has this landed on my doorstep? Billy Vunipola wrote, there just comes a point when you insult what I grew up believing in and you say enough is enough. Man was made for woman to procreate. Was that the goal? No. Saracens have taken the same route that Rugby Australia took last April when Israel Folau first made similar comments. And they've given him a formal warning. They've called it a serious error of judgment. He's been warned about his future conduct. They've given him a chance, effectively, Rory.
They have. I think Mark McCall has been a little bit disappointing on this. He's kind of said no one wants to hear my views. And as the leader of the Saracens organisation, as the director of rugby...
disappointing.
I would be disappointed by that. I think he's entitled to do it. He's employer. There's obviously employer-employee stuff going on there. But, you know, there are very few players in rugby who have come out. Over, you know, since Gareth Thomas did it all those years ago, there is still a culture. If we presume that statistically there are gay rugby players out there, there is, you know, there is still a culture where they don't come out until they're at least retired. And for the head of that leading club to basically play neutral when his marquee player makes those comments is a little bit disappointing from my perspective. And, you know, Saracens have a chance to take a lead on this a little bit, and they haven't. And they've lots of talented players. Billy Vunipola is one of the best players in the world, just like Israel Folau is.
Marquee player feels like the key phrase he used.
Absolutely,
there.
Yeah. If it was a squad player, you'd wonder. Now, Saracens, again, you know, he's an employee, and there is... Rugby Australia have almost established a one strike and you're out policy here. In that, you know, sorry, two strikes and you're out, that you will be given a second chance. And maybe that's fair enough. But
maybe that is fair enough, you know, because it is tricky terrain, you know.
And it's very, it is tricky.
Is going to say, come on, why can I not express myself?
It is tricky, but Nick Heath, the English commentator who's openly gay, that phrase is probably outdated anyway, but he is gay. He came out on his social media last week and did a little video, and it was actually summed this up. He summed it up much better than anyone else I've heard. And he said, look, all the other people on Israel Folau's list are choice. You choose to be an alcoholic, you know, you choose to drink alcohol, you choose to be an adulterer, but people are born gay. And, you know, there's people in the Saracens setup, certainly, who Billy Vunipola is completely, views are incompatible with. And just because he's a marquee player, I don't think you defend him to the hilt. I think you've got to look after the entire... You know, we hear about culture in rugby all the time and the culture of organisations. Well, this is a chance to make a stand. And even by not commenting, whatever about giving him a second chance, by just saying, oh, no one wants to hear my views on it, I think that's disappointing.
Yeah, Mark McCall didn't want to get involved. It's a big week. They have a massive game. But yeah, I think it's a fair comment to say he might have said a bit more. Cheka handled it really brilliantly. And what's actually clear from Cheka's comments is, regardless of how this case plays out, he's not going to play for Australia again. He may well get his $4 million and that will be paid grudgingly, or there may well be a settlement. But even if Folau wins the case, Checa made it pretty clear that we can't pick this guy again. He's done from an Australian point of view. Do you want to have, Keith, do you want to weigh in before we move on slightly on the Saracen situation?
Yeah, I look at that slightly differently. I think there's a whole variety, a very good article written by Brian Moore in The Telegraph yesterday in relation to it. And not because maybe Vinopola is closer to our shores than others, but I also think his speech was expressing his opinion, but not in as hateful a way as Folau was. Now, maybe Folau was only doing it through the scriptures, and maybe that's part of his justification for it, much and all as I think we are all would disagree with those views. But not everybody disagrees with those views. And so for someone who's deeply religious, for him to say it in that fashion, I think it's kind of down the list in severity of what was said. I think he has been open to a lot of criticism very, very quickly. I think he Channel 4 dropped him very quickly. I think Saracens gave him a big a reprimand. It's as I tried to say at the very start, I think it's something that's incredibly complex. Yeah. But I think he put out his views, but didn't put it out in a particularly hateful fashion, though I think it was unpalatable for an awful lot of us, to be honest.
Yeah, no, but look, speaking...
We're saying we're talking here and we're talking for three different people.
Sure.
And we say we totally disagree with his views. And I think we can put blanket over our views and say, yeah, we disagree with him entirely.
Mm.
It is where does that balance happen in terms of your freedom of right or expression? And the truth is, I think the law isn't quite up to speed with it yet.
Mm.
It's difficult, but it makes it very, very difficult for Saracens when they say they're fully inclusive. But we don't know, and we're not fully privy to what level of reprimand they've given.
No, it's true. And speaking as a committed atheist, I'm no fan of the Catholic Church, you're watching friends, family going to the church and you look at their teachings on homosexuality. Don't think they're all that much better, to be honest, but everybody has to be entitled to a religious belief in particular. That's particularly enshrined. It's one of the reasons this is so complicated. This isn't just Israel Folau saying, I don't like this type of person, I don't like that type of person, and throwing out a load of hate speech and anti-Semitic speech. Like, he's quoting scripture, and that does have an elevated place in society, which has made this thing all that more complicated, Keith.
Yeah, it is. It's extraordinarily complicated. I spoke to a few people about it during the week, and, you're trying to say, well, obviously, we think this is wrong, but where does it fit within law? We're not lawyers here, And where does it fit in within diversity and inclusivity? And it doesn't fit in there at all.
Mm.
So if you break it down and take the religious component out of it, which is what Rugby Australia have tried to say, they've basically said this is a contractual issue where this is highlighted that people are representatives of our company or our organisation, and they cannot espouse those beliefs publicly. It's just incredibly complex.
We're going to take a very short break, and then we're going to get stuck into the weekend's rugby.
Wednesday night rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Welcome back. Keith Wood still with us. Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent still with us. Saracens against Munster at the Ricoh Arena on Saturday. Leinster against Toulouse at the Aviva Stadium Sunday. Wayne Barnes, the referee. Just over 40,000 tickets sold. Latest count at the Aviva Stadium. About 600 fans or so from Toulouse. I saw, Rory, you were at the Stuart Lancaster press conference in the last 24 hours. Much of the focus on Sean O'Brien.
Yep, Sean O'Brien, Johnny Sexton, same as it ever was, really. We kind of went for Johnny first and then got an update on Sean O'Brien. I mean, we haven't seen Johnny Sexton play for Leinster since December 29th
Munster
against
game.
Munster.
Yeah.
we haven't seen Sean O'Brien play well since he came back from his injury. Maybe in Murrayfield in that game when he got back into the Ireland team, but really he hasn't hit the heights. And Stuart Lancaster conceded that yesterday. And I think if Sean was here, he'd probably concede it as well. But Stuart Lancaster's point was, A, he gets the sense that he's close to getting back to the heights that we kind of know and respect. And B, they didn't need him to do it because Dan Levy is gone and Josh Sean Fear is gone for the season. Leinster are down to Sean O'Brien, and you know it seems strange to say that, but you know I think if the two other players were fit, Sean O'Brien probably would be struggling to make the match day squad this weekend.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that at Leinster this week. There's a lot of players who we know are excellent players who've delivered on the big stage before, but we haven't seen it for a little while. And I think that's the big concern with Leinster this week, that on paper and based on their two games against Toulouse this season, they are justifiably favourites. They're at home. They're the champions. But we need to see it before we can really believe it, I think. Mm.
Keith, lots of big names back. So Robbie Henshaw played the guts of an hour against Glasgow at the weekend. Devon Toner played. Johnny Sexton, as we've said, is back. Tadhg Furlong's knee is going to be OK. Just in your personal experience as someone who would have come back from injuries right throughout your career, with Sean O'Brien in mind, and he's not a young player anymore, I presume it got harder to come back with little or no rugby and get up to speed very, very quickly as you got older. That must be something that diminishes with age.
Yeah, I'm going to partially disagree with you.
That's good.
There. I mean, on my last one, which was before the World Cup in 2003, I had a few operations, got overweight deliberately. So that I could try and pile on as much muscle as possible. No running, no real fitness, different times maybe, different policies. And then I had to try and work that off in time for the World Cup. And I remember playing a game and Eddie O'Sullivan left me on for 60 minutes when I really could have come off after about 45. And I was absolutely sucking diesel after 60. But I was fine. It took time to recover afterwards, but I think if you can get your head in the space to perform, you'll drive your body that bit further. You will be able to. Mm. The problem for Sean O'Brien is that there's a whole litany of different injuries that he seems to have had. And also, I think when you look back at the Leinster team, some of the guys who've been injured have been injured quite a lot with different injuries and have played a huge amount of really big, high-level rugby over the last 3 or 4 years. And I think in many respects, a lot of those guys are just waiting to get to the end of the season. Now, they still want to win, but they need to have a period of time where they're able to just go and train and not have to get back for a game. But I look at Sean O'Brien this season, and I don't think he has hit some of the heights of the past. He absolutely hasn't. But I still think he has often played very well in that period of time. Not as well as he would have liked us. In the game against Scotland, he came back.
Yeah.
He got criticised for two or three things. But I actually thought he put in a huge shift of work.
Yeah, that was one of the, I think that was his best game of the Six Nations, really.
Yeah. So it's the idea of being able to get your head right to us, to get the negativity out there that he's a bit older and he's a few injuries and he mightn't be able to do certain things. Well, if he isn't able to do them, he shouldn't do them. Mm. He should concentrate on doing the things he can do and doing them at the standard that he's able to do them. And you limit your game and you change your game. And I know we've mentioned this before. I made absolutely certain that I didn't offload out of the tackle in the last 2 years or 3 years of my career, because that was where I was at my weakest point. If I got tackled trying to offload and I landed on my elbow, my shoulder was going to go again. So I ended up, I didn't tell anybody about it, of course, but I ended up tucking in my elbows an awful lot. You know, whatever chance you might have had of getting a pass off me at the start of my career was gone by the end of it, because you just couldn't do it. But you had to concentrate on what you were able to do. And if that was good enough for the team and the team wanted to have you, well, that's fine. So I think if he maybe takes out certain elements of his game and try and concentrate on what he is still able to do at a Sean O'Brien level, I think he can have a huge impact on the team.
Okay, well, that's O'Brien. Rory, Robbie Henshaw in this fixture last year against Scarlets came back after a long break and was outstanding at the Aviva Stadium. Devin Toner's not a man reliant on fast twitch muscles. You would think he'll be able to truck around, and obviously his line-out work will be as excellent as ever. Tadhg Furlong's knee seems to be okay. So all eyes on Johnny Sexton, as ever. You know, he's just massively important for Leinster. He survived us Tuesday, Lancaster joked.
Yeah.
It's Tuesday on a Friday.
Slightly David Brent, to use your own the catchphrase about you in the press conference. But yes, they did a Tuesday on a Friday, which is basically a high-intensity training session with loads of ball and play time that Leinster have become renowned for in the time Lancaster's been at the club, and Sexton got through that. He's trained fully so far this week, as far as we're aware, although last time we thought he was in the mix and it was on the eve of the game that it kind of came to light that he was going to miss out. So you hope, like, just for Sexton's sake, I mean, the last reference point we have for him is that game in Cardiff where he was at war with himself and things just started going terribly, terribly wrong. And you just want a new reference point. You want to see him back to where he was a week before that against France, because he was very good that day. You want to see him running things. You want to see him just back to being Johnny Sexton of 2018 rather than the one we've seen in 2019. You hope that this bit of win, you know, Leinster said it was very precautionary to leave him out of that Ulster game, which was a risk. You'd hope that they'd given him the time and space to get everything right, whatever the problem is. It's a quad strain, is what they're saying. Whether he's been out in Santry to kind of work on that area again, because that's kind of been the root of all of his issues the last couple of years. Yeah. You just hope that he's got all those things back and he's moving well and that he's able to run the show. Because if he's still fighting with his body and fighting with himself and, you know, arguing with referees, he's not leading the team in the way that they need to be led. And as captain, which was an extra bit of responsibility he got this season, they looked to him even more than they ever did before. Nisei was gone as a touchstone for, you know, Nisei was the one who set the tone for them so often in these big games and these big weeks. You know, they look to Sexton now, and if it's not 100% with Johnny, you just fear that, you know, there's other factors going on, that he's starting to, you know, bollock people who possibly don't deserve it, or he's, you know, raging at the ref, or things are just starting to go wrong. So we've no evidence that it's gotten better, but except for the body of work that he's put in before this year and the old classes permanent line that people trot out about him. But he is 33 now, I think. He's on the back of an injury and a bit of rough form.
Yeah.
And for Leinster's sake and Ireland's sake, they need him back fit and firing, because there are too many... Leinster have not hit the heights of last season, and that, to me, is a concern, because Toulouse, while they're loose in the extreme, are able to do wondrous things, as they proved when they beat Clermont 47-44 at the weekend.
Yeah. It is a European fixture, therefore we are having the Scott Fardy, Jameson Gibson Park, James Lowe discussion. 3-2, don't go.
Yeah.
We can take it almost as read that Scott Fardy plays. He's of the three who tends to be in. You're grimacing even as I say that. Can we not even get that far in the debate?
I think this season Fardy has probably missed out because Toner and Ryan has got to such a point that he is the first name of the team sheet and now Toner's back. So do you go for your reserve second row or your reserve scrum half? I'm not sure. They were giving nothing away on Monday or yesterday when they were doing a press conference. I think Lowe just gives them that extra bit of fire.
So are we now saying Lowe has to play, really?
I would personally would pick him, but if you go back to, like, Dave Kearney's in really good form, Adam Byrne hasn't let them down, and this is probably a game where you want to go in and make no mistakes and have a really strong kicking game rather than one where you want to get involved in offloads and stuff, because that's where Toulouse are at their most dangerous. So maybe they go with the less risky options. But I think in that Ulster game, they just missed that bit of fireworks that Lowe gives them.
Lingering memory as well of the Stockdale non-try of Adam Byrne and Jordan Larmour not covering themselves in defence of glory.
No, Dave Kearney made his way back brilliantly. And in fairness, he's playing his way back into unbelievable form, which is, you know, a little bit of a forgotten man.
Scored that try at the RDS against Toulouse.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's obviously the Rob Kearney, Jordan Larmour conundrum as well. You know, do they go back to the security of Kearney, or do they go for it? They've got a lot of options.
Yeah. If they leave Gibson Park out, it's Nick McCarthy or it's Hugh O'Sullivan.
I think Nick McCarthy's been deregistered. I think it's Hugh O'Sullivan.
Has he been deregistered?
I think so, because he's only just back from injury. Unless there is scope for them to register a player, I think, this week. Mm. But he was deregistered early in the season to make room for someone else.
Hugh O'Sullivan, when he was injured, 6 minutes of Champions Cup rugby.
Yeah, it's a big risk.
But they brought in five minutes.
They brought Max Deegan on for his European debut against Saracens last year. Mm. So they are willing to back young players if they feel they're ready. But I think they do like Gibson Park's ability to come off the bench and change the tempo, especially if they do get into a position where they're chasing the game a little bit.
Yeah.
He is a player who can make a big difference.
Okay. On the wider point of Leinster, Keith, this is going to be a real litmus test of where they are in 2019. Lancaster was asked about their general form, and it was interesting because he said I mean, he went on and talked through the whole season. But he said, I think people's memories are reasonably short because the Wasps game we played, some outstanding rugby, I thought, like that was their first game of the campaign. That was back in October. It is a while ago now. And he talks about the two Bath games. The first one didn't go very well. They played well at the Aviva, beat them by 40-odd points, which is fair. We beat Toulouse at home. Then we put 40 points on Wasps away. The Ulster game, he said, is lingering in people's minds. When, for you, were Leinster last really in their groove across an 80-minute performance?
It's funny, because I actually don't take the fact that Leinster have been poor. I think they've had a really bad injury run this year to key players, and that affects them heavily.
Mm.
But I also thought that they won the Pro 14, or they qualified from their Pro 14 conference so early that they've taken the foot totally off the pedal. And I think we've seen that in the performances afterwards. And you often wonder why there's no such thing as a non-test or dead rubber, because these are like dead rubber matches. Rugby is an incredibly physical game, and there has to be something in it at the end of the game. You have to be doing it for a reason. And in many respects, their reason has been blooding players and trying to get other players and players back from injury. So I thought that was Ulster's best performance of the season, and Leinster still won. So they weren't entirely firing. I think a lot of the players came back from the Irish camp being a little bit deflated, and I think they got their victory. So I don't have that sense of the sort of the negative element that goes around it. I do think Leinster become a far more potent team when Devon Toner's in the side, because it gives a higher sense of security around line-out ball, and Leinster are very, very sharp off line-out ball. So I think they were at their best in the couple of matches before Christmas. And I think since then, they haven't needed to be. And in many respects, by winning their conference so early, it has given them the opportunity to almost have a down period of time. So yeah. I would expect them to be incredibly sharp.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, look, I accept the point totally. That said, if Jacob Stockdale puts that ball on the ground, they're in big trouble in that game. Now, they do have big names back this weekend. Toulouse, two defeats in 23 games. The Claremont game, Rory mentioned at the weekend, was insane, really. 47-44. Yeah. DuPont played a 10. I mean, it seems like he can do whatever he wants. Intermac did come on. Colby's in great form, Guiton scoring tries. So we know about their attack. And then defensively, you'd have to say they did remarkably well in that quarterfinal against Racine as well. 14 men after Zach Holmes was sent off. They played the guts of an error with 14 men against the top scorers in the top 14.
I love Toulouse. I love how they play. I love the energy they bring to the game. I love the skill, the fast feet, the throwback to the French alternative attacking line coming from 15 yards back, which, you know, when it's different, when it's used new again, it's entirely different, and it puts pressure on defences to try and figure out exactly what lines people are running. There's a sense of freedom to them, to how they're playing. I have to say their performance last weekend was like barking crazy. It was a great game and pretty phenomenal. I think Leinster will have to be at their best to beat them, but I expect Leinster to be at their best. I expect Toulouse to not give up because they haven't had that sense of freedom for quite a while. I think they're on their way, you know, they're away from home, and we would say for all the French teams that come away from home, they tend to give up if things don't go well for them. The manner in which Toulouse play kind of belies that idea. They're able to score from anywhere. However, I do think Leinster, if they put a really good defensive performance in, can starve Toulouse of a lot of that game. Mm. I mean, but they need to have the highest level of accuracy. I mean, this is a game that would be a perfect final. You know, the opportunity of winner takes all. But I think Toulouse have been out of the top three for a while. I think they'd like to be able to say, actually, this is a free one for us. Let's have a go. Let's be the Toulouse we've been for a lot of the season. And let's just attack every single thing. And it could be for an absolute cracker. But I would expect Leinster to be at the top of their game. I really would. I just think for the manner of the last few weeks, I think every single thought, conversation has been about this weekend.
Yeah, fair enough. And they certainly denied to lose possession at the RDS in January. Rory, final thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I think he's right. I think they will be at their best, but I don't think it'll be that necessarily that pretty. I think what they need to do is be really clever, be quite economical, and not give Toulouse ins into the game. And I think that looks like them having long periods of possession, winning their set piece, getting their basics right, and taking the opportunities when they come. And a bit like, you know, Toulouse kind of punched themselves out, I thought, in that RDS game. And it's a little bit of a template there for them, because they're not going to be any fitter now. Those guys play week in, week out in the top 14. They're going to have a lot more in their legs than Leinster do, having kind of been able to manage their squad so much more and a couple of players to come back. I think Leinster have had some... I think they've had a good season, but they're not at the level that they need to be to win the competition. But they could just be timing their run very well. And if the different parts come together for them, they've got what it takes to take this Toulouse team out.
Okay. On Saturday, we have Saracens against Munster at the Ricoh Arena in Coventry. So Tyler Blindell's going to be the man in the number 10 jersey. I signed him for weeks like this, said Johan van Graan. He was absolutely effusive in his praise of Blindell at the Munster press conference all week. Talked about his composure, his calmness. Even when he's injured, he's a huge part of the build-up to each week because of his rugby intelligence. So Rory Scannell as well was saying he's going to go straight into coaching. 2 years ago at the Aviva Stadium, Keith, Saracens seemed to physically bully Munster. Munster never looked like scoring a try. They cut them open a few times as well. Blindell didn't go well in that game. There was no Conor Murray, which is obviously a huge factor going into this weekend. How different are Munster now?
I think Munster are a bit further down the track. I do think that Tyler in that season, he's a guy I don't know at all. I've met him a few times, but I don't know him. Everybody talks about him in terms of his capacity and capability and assuredness around the camp. Everybody talks of him as in almost an on-field coach, which is very interesting. And these are people that are saying it's not looking for a soundbite. He was dismantled on that day because Saracens gave no space anywhere on the field that day. I know Munster came in for a lot of criticism, but no Conor Murray at nine. The ball was slow. It was held at the back of the ruck. There was a lot of counter rucks going on the same day. I watched it as a fan in the crowd. It was a hard game to watch. Anytime any player got the ball, they got it under huge pressure. I would have felt that Blaindell had put in a year of years up to that point, but he did not get a second in that game. And the pressure told, you know. So balls went to ground, kicked out the full, not kicked over. It was a hard, hard day for him. And I remember thinking afterwards and commenting afterwards that this is a guy who's been injured for most of his career. He actually hasn't had the opportunity to play in such big games. You know, you think at 26 years of age, he would have played a lot of those games. Now he's 28, he has played them. And bearing in mind that one was a very disappointing game for him, he would have learned a huge amount from it. He'd have known how do you deal with this level of pressure again. And so subsequently, he's had another bad injury. He's come back in again. He looks fine. He has been stuck into everything. But it's how he has matured mentally over that period of time and how he'll be able to deal with the pressure. And the wish is that that game, being at the end of a full season that he'd never had before, with a huge emotion for all the different reasons that there were at that time, and I don't think it worked for him. But he will have learned a lot from it. I mean, I'm hoping that 2 years on, that with Conor beside him, and Conor's coming back to good form with a much stronger team, it seems to me, a much more confident team. I think Munster will go and say, can this be one of our crazy trips away from home in a semi-final and to go and get the win? All the odds are stacked against them with it. Saracens have a very good and more recent pedigree than Munster have. But I still think they'll go and say, this is our chance to go and get a win.
If you're just tuning in, it's Wednesday Night Rugby with Keith Wood and Rory O'Connor. Our rugby coverage and Off the Ball is brought to you with Vodafone, team of us, everyone in. Rory, Owen Farrell, Liam Williams, Brad Barrett's back, the Vunipola brothers, Sean Maitland, on you go. This is a pretty awesome team, Saracens, to say the least.
It is.
it has the feel of Munster with their now brilliant defence, their tournament leading defence, hanging in there for as long as they can, trying to just stay in there within a score and muster up something. That's the kind of game I'm expecting. I don't know what you're expecting.
I don't think you can do that. I think Munster have to learn from last season when they didn't get, you know, they came back from South Africa, having spent 2 weeks there, went to Bordeaux and just never got out of the traps and found themselves absolutely blown away. Mm. It happened against the Scarlets in a Pro 14 final. It happened against Glasgow in a Pro 14 final. They, in fairness, they tried to throw punches against Saracens 2 years ago and just found absolutely no give whatsoever. It should be remembered that CJ Stander was playing on one ankle that day, and everything that season pretty much went through Stander in terms of their ball carrying. They've got more strings to their bow in that regard now. I think they've got a real opportunity here. I don't think Saracens are as good as they were 2 years ago.
Right.
I think Farrell can be got at. Scotland showed that in Twickenham. But it's going to take an era-defining performance from Munster. But when better to perform, to give that performance? For Conor Murray's about to turn 30, Omani's 29, Stander's 28, Earls is 31 or 32 now.
Yeah.
This team need to deliver this season, in my opinion, or else the chance, they'll never get a better chance. And they're going away from home to a venue that will probably be predominantly full of Munster fans. So the intimidation factor is not there. Saracens don't rely on that anyway. And they've had, Van Graan spoke when he first got this job about that Saracens game at the Aviva Stadium, that was the game. He saw what Munster's limitations were then and has been working to try and grow their game since that point. And this is an unbelievable test of how much work he's gotten done in the 18 months he's been there. Whether they've got enough, I'm not sure, but I think they will deliver a performance. I think they have to. They haven't performed in their two semi-final trips so far, but 3 years in a row, that's a lot of collective knowledge they've built up. They've gone to Exeter, got a really good draw. Went to Gloucester and won really, really well. Yeah. Went to Murrayfield and won a game they should have lost. They've got steps they need to go on, but I think they've put themselves in a really strong position. And although Carberry's a massive loss, it's actually just, because he's gone down there, they actually have a huge amount of depth in that position. And I think there is a case to be made that Munster can pull off one of their great results on Saturday. It's going to take an unbelievable performance, but that's, you're in a European semi-final, that's what you expect.
I get very torn when we talk about things like DNA, because, Keith Earls did an interview recently and he said he's lost something like 16 knockout games.
Yeah.
And the recent DNA at the semi-final stage, whatever about quarter-finals, isn't so encouraging. And yet, that Edinburgh game did have just a slightly special quality. Are you going so far as to tip them to do it, or are you just saying they're going to give this a real rattle and surprise people?
I haven't decided yet. I'm getting close to it. I really think, I can understand why. I think Saracens are quite substantial favourites in the bookies, but it's a bit like Ulster ahead of Leinster. I think there's a compelling case to be made that Munster can go and win this game, and I think this team have to deliver something on Saturday. And if it's enough, Saracens are able to take those punches and win if they're at their best themselves. But I think Munster can do it. I'm not necessarily saying they will,
sure,
but I think they've got a real shot.
This isn't a foregone conclusion by any means.
No, I don't think so.
We'll get to some of your Heineken Star comments, by the way, on Friday when we'll announce the winner. You can keep them coming in on Facebook, but we're just running shy on time. Keith, are you willing to stick your neck out, or ultimately is the head going to rule the heart here?
Why the hell not at this stage, honest? What do we want?
That's the kind of analysis we want, Keith. Why the hell not?
we want an All-Irish final.
It is insane that we've never got one, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's a statistical anomaly.
Ulster fans will be texting in.
Sorry, okay, Leinster Ulster 2012.
Yeah, sorry.
It's an anomaly we haven't had Leinster against Munster in a European final.
Okay, that's a good side step there, Joe. It is because their histories didn't fully overlap. When things were going very well for them. And is this the time when it might? I don't know, but sure, why wouldn't? Like, that's what I'm going to go for. I'm going to say that Munster are going to have one of those crazy, crazy days that they so often have. And after a period of time when they do happen, you have to stop saying that these are kind of miracle matches, because they happen a bit too often. So for Munster, they need to have a couple of them, right? Because Leinster would still be favourites if that were to happen. But I think why not? I do think Leinster will hit top form at the weekend, because I think they have the time to. I think there's enough of bitterness in Munster from that loss a couple of years ago. I think the players are a bit older, a bit more mature, a bit more savvy, have done a lot since then. And I think they would be looking at this as an opportunity. And that's what I would ask for. If both teams take it as an opportunity and meet the pitch of the game very early, I think they both have a chance to go through.
OK, well, listen, when Munster win at the weekend, we'll kick off the montage next week with that final answer from you there. That's how we'll do things. Thanks a million.
I should have been more succinct.
Keith Wood there. And Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent, who will be at both games for the Irish Independent over the weekend. Thanks, Rory.
Cheers, up.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.